Welcome, everyone. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters, and today we're shifting. We're living in a time of the global pandemic, but we're going to shift a global paradigm all at the same time. And this one, I believe, is going to help you and I understand in a great way. I'm going to leap to this. First of all, I'll introduce you. My interviewee is Dr. Mark Cohen. And I'm always talking about being an evolutionary being or wanting to be an evolutionary being. But Mark, you have studied so many different forms of healing, integrative medicine, regular medicine, and then all these, not alternatives, but the Asian, you know, the Chinese methods and breathing and all these other techniques that are more than adjuncts, but sort of aspects of healing all over the place. And you want to do global, you want to kind of, I suppose, lead or encourage a global wellness consciousness and make that our whole force. Is that right, in healing?
Yeah, that's been my life's goal.
I love it.
In primary school, in the very early 70s, I read The Limits to Growth, which, you know, by the Club of Rome, and they, you know, they predicted, you know, total global collapse by 2020, around that time. And, you know, because they pointed to, you know, population increase and, you know, pollution increase and resource utilization increase, and said, look, we're on a limited planet and that can't continue. And, you know, when I reflected on that, I thought, yeah, look, there's going to be total transformation within my lifetime and probably around the very middle of my life. I'm 56 this year, and then, you know, when I was 10 or 12, I thought, oh, I'll live to 112, you know, that's the oldest person. So that's going to be right at the center of my life. And I thought, and then, you know, reflecting on that throughout my life, I've thought that we can go either way. Either humans are going to obliterate ourselves and, you know, we'll go to a zero population, or we're going to have to reach a stable human population on the planet, you know, in my life. So it's either going to be, you know, fantastic, and we're going to, you know, end up in a utopia and, you know, really literally realize worldwide wellness and take an evolutionary leap that I think is as significant as the evolutionary leap of, you know, life going onto land or life emerging from the oceans as a, you know, from the primordial soup into the first cell. I think, you know, we really are at a very critical point in evolution right now.
And I want to interrupt you just briefly and say, at 10 years old, you already were an evolutionary being, were you not? I mean, isn't that kind of a big concept for a 10-year-old to just embrace?
Well, I think it's evolved over my life, because that when I was 10, I thought, okay, you know, there's going to be a massive change. And, you know, that was in the early 70s around the OPEC oil crisis. And and as I've, you know, got older, when I was in high school, you know, the Life on Earth series came out with David Attenborough, and I just soaked that in, you know, the whole talking about the evolution of life. And, you know, I really excelled in biology. And when it was coming to, you know, decide what university course I'd do, I thought, well, I want to learn as much about wellness as I can. I didn't even have the word wellness then. I thought just, you know, living well and how to, and I've always focused on fun.
I heard that. That's one of my favorite words too.
So I thought, how can I have the most fun in my life, but also how can I help this evolutionary shift become positive rather than negative? And I've devoted my life. I spent 38 years at university. You know, I studied Western medicine and, you know, psychology and physiology and Eastern medicine and biomedical engineering and, you know, and then wellness. Mm. So for the last 38 years,
genetics as well. I mean, I guess that's in biomedical, is it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was, you know, I've been a medical doctor for the last 30 years, and just over half of that time, I've been a professor at one of Australia's largest universities, really trying to create wellness as an academic discipline. And wellness is a trans discipline, because it's not just about health, it's about business practices, it's about environment, it's about design and architecture and permaculture and positive psychology and yoga and all of these elements that I brought together. And I've always been the bridge. I've been the bridge between Eastern and Western medicine, the bridge between science and spirituality. And that's where I think I'm most comfortable. That's why integrative medicine was such a natural field for me, because I love bridging things. I think interesting things happen at the edge, and that's where I like to be.
Well, also, when you're talking wellness, I often think that It's the art of being and the art of becoming is what moves through the whole wellness consciousness, isn't it? We're not just stuck as this kind of being. We can take action on every level.
It's a total transformative process. And you know, we are all conscious, you know, constantly evolving. Or we need to be, you know, we're not busy being born, we're busy dying. So we need to be constantly evolving. And that's another thing in my life. I've always been reinventing myself or, you know, finding a new field and then finding myself as a leader in that field and then absorbing that and moving on.
I think it's really exciting that you live that way, and also that you're hooked up with somebody like Wim Hof at times, who has taught a lot of us about defying what we think are limitations of hot and cold, and then really taking, well, I was listening to you describing what stress really is and how we can use stress differently. Maybe I'll just hand it to you to talk about that, because a lot of people get burned out because of stress and that's the end. And you're saying in a state of becoming and wellness, stress is really an advantage at times, right?
Well, that's right. And there's a lot of research right now on hormetic stress, you know, stress that actually builds up your resilience, or the concept of being anti-fragile. And that's where stress actually makes you stronger. And I think, you know, there's a lack of awareness of that, but it's a very powerful concept that we actually need stress. We need to be challenged in our life to feel whole, to actually and explore the boundaries of who we are and what we're capable of, but also to stay resilient and to stay healthy. If we're coddled up and wrapped in cotton wool and, you know, stuck in our houses and just, you know, fearful of the world, not only don't we get to live fully, but it actually also actively diminishes our health and well-being.
I think you're absolutely right. And like when you think about martial arts, and you've studied those as well, haven't you?
I have.
And they've been used for centuries to defy limitations in human abilities, have they not?
Well, that's right. And actually, my study of first Western medicine and then Chinese medicine and then martial arts and then dance all came up with the concept of five elements and five rhythms. And that's been a very powerful integrating concept that I've used throughout my studies and my lectures and as a evolutionary concept, because within Chinese medicine, they describe, you know, the five phases of transformation, which all things go through when they evolve. And that's, you know, flowing, staccato, chaos, lyrical, and stillness. They're the five rhythms as described by Gabriel Roth. And when you look at evolution in general, they map to those five rhythms, and that's the evolution of all life on Earth, or the evolution of vertebrates or invertebrates, or the evolution of your own life, you know, a single human life, or the evolution of just a party, or the evolution, you know, things that transform.
Are the phases again? Can you repeat those? Because I'm just trying to remember them.
So it's flowing, staccato, chaos, lyrical, and stillness. And in Chinese medicine, you know, that would be metal, water, wood, fire, earth, although not in that order. It actually would be water, wood, metal, fire, earth, in that order. And they describe, for example, that the evolution of vertebrate life goes from, and actually, as a concept, evolution, all major breakthroughs in evolution have come about because the previous level of evolution has been totally engulfed.
Okay.
So if you track the evolution of life on Earth, there was, you know, first the primordial soup, and that actually happened at the meeting of hot and cold. So when the very hottest water on Earth met the coldest water on Earth, and that happened at the very bottom of the oceans, because cold water is, you know, very, very dense. So that sinks to the bottom of the oceans, and water can be minus 22 degrees centigrade at the bottom of the oceans and still liquid. And that water then meets hot water coming out of hydrothermal vents, these hot springs at the bottom of the ocean, and that water can be 400 degrees Celsius and still liquid. And it's come through the earth and it's dissolved all the earth's minerals. And when these two waters meet, you have this explosion of organic chemistry. Huh. And that's where the primordial soup sort of was developed. And, you know, that was, you know, happened for, you know, a few hundred million years. But then that soup got enveloped and totally engulfed by a lipid membrane, and that was the first cells. And that was, you know, that's what we sort of think of as the start of life. And then, you know, that brought about what we call prokaryote life, you know, simple cells without individual organelles. But then some of those simple cells got engulfed by other cells and stayed alive, and then they became chloroplasts and mitochondria. And then you had multicellular you had eukaryotic cells, which had organelles. And that was the next big jump in evolution of life. And eukaryotic cells carried out photosynthesis and changed the atmosphere and created oxygen. And that took about 2.5 billion years.
Oh, wow.
For oxygen to be released. Yeah, it's a long story. But then those eukaryotic cells got engulfed by each other and became multicellular organisms. And those multicellular organisms used cells as communication with sexual reproduction, and that created this whole big explosion of diversity. And then those, jellies and worms and simple multicellular organisms got engulfed by calcium carbonate and became insects and crustaceans and shelled life. And shelled life is still the most abundant life on Earth. So if you count ants, insects and ants and shellfish, that's the most biomass on Earth. But if you're engulfed by a shell, and that was really the evolution of invertebrate life, went from gels to cells to organelles to multi-cells and then shells. So it sort of, that summarizes the whole invertebrate life of the first 3 billion years of evolution. And then we had the invagination of these shells and became our bones. And because a shell can't really move around, it can't travel around the whole planet. I mean, insects do that, but they're not as mobile and as vertebrates. So once we started had vertebrate life, we went from flowing in the oceans, and we were covered by scales, and that's fish. And then life went onto land, and was covered by skin, and that was reptiles. Hmm. And that's the staccato phase. And then
I keep thinking while you say that, it's like they had the intention to get out there and walk on the land. They're following intentions.
Evolution, I don't know if it's an intention, but it's certainly a momentum.
Yes.
And a momentum of increasing complexity and increasing diversity and increasing conquering of different terrain. Mm-hmm. So we went from from the oceans, scales to skin to feathers in the air, which is sort of chaos and the chaotic movement of air currents and birds, and then to fur, which is mammals. And mammals can go pretty much everywhere, because mammals go in the water, they go in the air, and they go on land. And then we have fashion or technology and humans, and we can go everywhere because we can make airplanes and cars and Gore-Tex jackets and go over the whole planet. And that's we're now coming to the conclusion of that phase of technology. Of humans have now not only taken over the whole Earth, you can pretty much go everywhere on Earth as a tourist destination, whether it's the top of Everest or the North and South Poles or anywhere you want.
So that's amazing, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
So that's the next level. And what I see now is we're about to create a stable human population, but the whole human population is about to be fully engulfed by technology.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the next phase of evolution, where we have this human technology, hopefully it's a symbiosis. But that's the process we're currently experiencing, and it's going to be a total major shift. And then you'll see that the whole
planet... Does that turn us into AI, artificial intelligence? What I mean is, there kind of a marriage there of the technology and humanity?
I think that's inevitable, and we're already seeing that marriage. I mean, everyone's connected to their phones and to technology, and pretty much everyone on Earth can speak to everyone else on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone can be a broadcast and a receiver. So, that's, we've laid the foundation, and it's been a dirty, messy process to do that. We've had to have fossil fuels, and we've had to have the Industrial Revolution, and even actually the evolution of human culture has gone through flowing, staccato, chaos, lyrical, and stillness. So, the hunter-gatherers were flowing because they moved around on their feet. And all of these five elements, or the five rhythms, have correlations with the body part and emotions. And you can go very deep within Chinese medicine or within five rhythms, and you know, you can make correlations. But if you look at human culture, we've started off as, you know, flowing with the seasons and the herds, you know, walking with feet and talking as our form of communication. And then we went to agriculture, which was staccato, where we had walled cities. So we really, like a cell, we engulfed our cities and we started to work the land and communicate via writing. And then we had industrial revolution, which was chaotic, and we started burning fossil fuels and using the printing press and using industrial processes. Then we had the post-industrial age, which is, you know, just after the Second World War, I guess, where we started having ideology as the dominant form, where we started having you know, feminism and environmentalism, and we started communicating via computers and networks. And now we're going to the stillness age, the Gaian age, where we have a global consciousness, a global humanity, and a stable population. And, we're experiencing that level right now. So, you know, certainly in the next decade, we're gonna see that. And I think it's up to every person on the planet right now. If you're alive on Earth right now, you're an extreme evolutionary being. And you're part of that global transformation in consciousness.
And there is a chaos going on right now, too, where the boundaries of everything are shaking, right?
All those rhythms happen all together, all the time. And, you know, from when I was young, I've always thought that, you know, we'll go one way or the other. Either we're going to destroy ourselves or we're going to create a heaven on earth. And I've always thought it's been the flip of a coin. Like, you know, it's 50-50 either way. And I've always also thought that there's no point thinking about the negative, because then you even just thinking about it
helps. You just get afraid, and that makes it crazy.
You get afraid, but also that fear creates entropy, because entropy happens in a closed system. And by having that fear, you actually help that negative outcome happen. So rather than having that fear and being paranoid about everything, I've come up with this whole concept of pronoia, and that's the belief that the whole universe is plotting to make you happy, and that
That's great.
Yeah, well, it's a really nice way to live, because if you believe the whole world is plotting to make you happy, that means even if something seemingly bad happens, you can say there's a gift in this for me, and by even having the expectation that there's a gift, you help create and find that gift.
Well, I know you understand energy really well, and I'm going, isn't it when we understand that there's a gift in it, that does release the dense energy packets that we have inside of ourselves that help us to release to evolution, doesn't it?
Absolutely. So there's these two forces. There's evolution, which is open and expansive and sort of focused on love, and there's entropy, which is constricting. It happens in closed systems, and it works through fear. And we can decide, are we going to operate through, you know, love or fear, entropy or evolution? And, you know, I've always thought there's no, you know, you need to understand entropy. You need to understand the possible negative outcomes, but you understand them, but you act from love. You act from being open. You act from the expectation that the whole world is going to be paradise. And that helps it happen. And it's a lot more fun.
Okay, you bet it is. But let's jump into the pandemic, because it's relevant and it's related, and I'd love you to tie it to something which is really shocking for a lot of us, that there's a global force that's not only hidden, because we've all had suspicions about that in the past, but this is like right in our faces as a big threat, and it's global. And I'm going, I believe it's a prelude to evolution, or it can be. But I think you probably have some very interesting comments to make on that, or suggestions.
Yeah, well, I mean, I see that in a much bigger perspective than I think a lot of other people. Because the way I see it, there are these five major industries that control the whole planet.
Okay.
And these five industries are controlled by a very, very small number of people right now. So it's, you know, the banks, it's the media, it's agribusiness, you know, agriculture, it's the pharmaceutical industry, and it's the oil industry or the energy industry. And they pretty much control all the food and all the information and all the energy. Well, actually, not all. It's about two-thirds. And I did a calculation, back-of-the-envelope calculation recently. And I looked at 20 products that we all buy that kill us, that are actually toxic, directly toxic to us. And, you know, things like chlorine and fluoride and pesticides and, you know, electromagnetic radiation and nuclear radiation and all these, all, you know, weapons and all the things that are bad for us. Mm-hmm. And they represent a market that's about $61 trillion a year.
Whoa.
And that's about two-thirds of global GDP. So currently we spend two-thirds of all the money on Earth on products that are bad for us and that are products that are controlled by a very small number of people. And I think that the number of people who there's a statistic that's been around for the last, you know, dozen years or so of that how many people, how many of the top billionaires are equivalent to the half the human population in terms of wealth. And it used to be over just about 100, you know, the top 100 people owned the same as half the world. And then 3 years ago, it was about 67, then it went to 46. And at the start of last year, it was 26. The top 26 richest people owned the same as half the whole planet.
Wow.
And that was at the start of last year. And I know, I haven't seen figures for this year, but I know in America that, you know, the super rich have, you know, increased their wealth enormously just through the lockdown. And I think the top three richest people in America have the same wealth as half the American population. So they control these industries. They control the media. They control our food. They control pharmaceuticals.
Well, our need is controlling us as well, and media controls us. I find that just so heartbreaking at times.
Well, that's it. Well, they control the information, and I see this as. But I don't, you know, say that these people are evil and they're out to get us. I mean, they may well be, but we feed them, we pay them, we're addicted to their products. We use all their, you know, free services, and we use petrol and all of this. But the way I see it is, the analogy is we're on a booster rocket. So we're on this rocket of consciousness. And just like when, you know, you're sending a rocket out into space, you have these booster rockets, which are noisy and smelly, and they leave this toxic plume of pollution. Mm-hmm. But once they're not needed anymore, you release them and let them go, and then they crash and burn and fall back to Earth, and consciousness will keep on going. And I see these five industries as our booster rockets. We've needed industrial revolution. We've needed technology. We've needed all these polluting industries to create the technology infrastructure that we can be talking across the world from each other, that mm-hmm. the whole humanity can be connected. And now we're in what I see is the death throes of these industries. And you know, whether they'll, you know, try and drag us all down as they crash and burn, or whether that we'll be able to release them and then move on. That's the big question.
Well, you talk about consciousness. Doesn't it penetrate their minds as well? I mean, you know, the waking up.
Yeah, I think their minds, it's not just their minds. I think this is the force of technology. I mean, technology is really taking over. Mm-hmm. So it's not any individual or even a group of people. I think it's the force of technology, because if it wasn't one individual, you know, another one would come up and do the same thing. But it's whether technology, we can release these old technologies, these damaging entropic technologies, mm-hmm. and move on with, you know, if we can transform, you know, agribusiness with, you know, pesticides and GMOs and fertilizers and fake foods and food additives and packaging and all this toxic stuff. Mm-hmm. If we can transform that into regenerative agriculture and local food communities, you know, we can have, you know, seasonal local organic food for everyone on Earth. Mm-hmm. If we can transform, you know, the media from being really directed at propaganda and censorship and, you know, surveillance capitalism to you know, a whole global media of peer-to-peer, net neutrality, privacy, and open communication, but, you know, respectful, you know, private open communication. Mm-hmm. You know, that we have the groundwork for that. And we have the groundwork for transforming fossil fuels into renewable energy. We have the groundwork for turning the whole medical industry with a focus on illness and pharmaceuticals and you know, vaccines and really toxic products, which are one of the largest causes of death on Earth, mm-hmm. to wellness industry that's focused on, you know, being well and ecosystems and local communities and permaculture. So we have all the technology is around, the information is around. Now we just have to see how do we implement it. And that's the unknown. So we're living in this amazing time in the history of life on Earth.
Oh, I realize it's very amazing, actually. It's shockingly amazing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I do think if you don't have that bigger perspective, it can be very fearful and very restrictive for a lot of people. And with, I have a lot of compassion for most people because, we've been
terrified.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're terrified, but they've also been polluted and, they've been fluoridated, so their pineal, their spiritual awakening's been suppressed. They've been chlorinated, so their microbiome has been suppressed, and they've been fed, sugar, fat, and salt, and they've been fed information, and they've been educated in a very restrictive way where, they've been taught to conform and then, graduate and work in the factories and the industrial system.
Mm-hmm.
So when you come from that perspective, it can be really hard to break out of that consciousness. And that's, I think, the bigger
way. Well, because they really don't feel well.
Well, that's right. And when you're not feeling well, it's really hard to have that, to trust, in love rather than fear. I mean, when you act from fear, you seek security. And there's not a lot of security for people right now.
Well, and the power, you've already mentioned these different systems like the banks and so on. The power that people have to have just to compete or combat some of those systems that are running their lives, it's quite amazing just to see that it's there, People have to step their minds out of that, and that's probably hard for some, huh?
Well, it's incredibly hard, because especially when you've been taught all your life that these are the systems that we need, and these are the authorities that are respected and trustworthy. And when you realize that, it's almost a cliche, there's the evil empire and then there's the rebellion, and the rebellion requires, it's up to individuals to step up and against this sort of evil empire, which is sort of coordinated and very hierarchical. It is directed by, a small group of people who then issue out their controls, and they're controlled, we're controlled through the media and through money and through our food and all of that. And to break free of that is... it's terrifying, but it's also liberating.
And it's also possible, isn't it? I used to teach school years ago, but I remember years back when I walked in front of my TV, which was playing The Little Buddha, an old movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt as I walked by, I went, yeah, that's it. The energy that comes out could change everyone. It could help everyone heal. If you put all kinds of things with good high frequency coming through the media, the world would change. It would have to, wouldn't it?
Well, that's right. And through the media, but it doesn't have to be through the media. I think even just individuals tapping into their own inner being and, resonating on the frequency of love and positivity and, a positive future, just that has a resonant effect that ripples through the whole human community.
I agree with you.
So I don't think it's about sharing stuff on social media. I mean, that all that stuff can help. But I think it's really that having that internal shift in your own being and living that. And then that has a sets an example for others. So you serve as a model, but it ripples throughout your own family, throughout your own community. And that helps create this global shift. Because I think everyone is needed in this global revolution. And if you're not part of the problem, or if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. So you're either dragging humanity down and you're part of that booster rocket that we have to let go, or you're part of the, the command capsule that is, heading out to the greater expanse of consciousness that we're heading toward.
So it's like creating optional energy sources for continuing our mobility around the world rather than oil, for example. It's like creating and creating, isn't it?
That's right. And I think we're going to see that there are so many alternatives.
Yeah, there already are, aren't there?
Well, there really are. And I mean, some of them have been suppressed because they're not as profitable. But I think we need to, rethink our global economy. And, what I think from the Limits to Growth, which I read when I was, in primary school, that, the global system will collapse. The whole fiat currency, the whole economy needs to be rethought. Rather than printing money that's based on debt, we need to, and there we have the foundation of, secure cryptocurrencies that we don't need central banks. It can all be decentralized and it can be based on something that has real value. All the systems we need now to go forward are available, but we just have to implement them and or realize that they're available to us as individuals and start to implement them. And I think that's the real challenge, you know, because there's no roadmap. This is, you know, new territory for all of us.
Well, I just want to jump back into the pandemic and say, with so many people unemployed, I think that's a really, in a way, that's a really perfect time to get people out of those work traps and that, you know, I don't even know how it's going to work, but I do feel there's going to be so much innovation coming from this incredible loss of hitching up to a system that is just so relentlessly ongoing. You know, well, I don't know.
I agree, because I mean, there are a lot of jobs that should never have been done in the first place. So people losing those jobs is not a, you know, I mean, it's terrible that people lose their livelihoods and their security. But we need to rethink, you know, what a meaningful work is or you know, what other jobs we want people to do. Mm-hmm. And we really have, you know, we need to rethink how we distribute resources on planet Earth. And one of the things that's always hit me, I mean, I'm been a water baby. I've been, you know, I love water. I've been working with the wellness industry and the spa industry and hot springs but as a medical doctor, it's really clear that the cheapest, the simplest, and the most effective health intervention on Earth is just clean water.
Wow.
And
we don't have a lot of that in some areas, do we?
Well, it's actually a really rare commodity. And not only, you know, in the first world, because our water's polluted through the distribution system. We have, you know, lead solders and biofilm and, you know, all the pipes are polluted. And then we chlorinate the water and fluoridate the water. But then we have 1 in 3 people on Earth that don't have access to clean water. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, 1 in 3 people can't wash away their, you know, their urine, their feces, their menstrual blood, their sweat. And, you know, that's about health, but it's also about dignity and comfort and luxury. I mean, water is luxurious. So that, for me, that's you know, such a pressing problem. And, you know, I think if we spent the same amount of money on clean water that we're spending on vaccines right now, mm-hmm. we wouldn't need any vaccines because infectious disease wouldn't exist. And, you know, one in seven people don't have access to drinking water, but 1 in 3 people don't have access to bathing water. And water is the operating system for our bodies. It's the infrastructure for our bodies. If you count the molecules in your body, you're 99.98% water molecules. So water is the carrier of consciousness. You know, water holds memory. And I think, you know, when we start realizing how sacred water is and that we can be in harmony with the Earth's waters rather than polluting. I mean, now we've got this massive, you know, tea bag of plastic the size of, you know, Texas floating in the ocean.
Yeah, that's bad. Mm-hmm.
And that's all breaking down, and there's no living thing on Earth that isn't polluted by plastic. So, you know, we eat about a credit card of plastic every week, just what's the microplastics in our food and water. So we need to really change our relationship to water. And once we do that, I think all the other things can, you know, can sort of go right on their own. It's a permaculture principle. When you get the basic things right, everything else sort of goes right by itself.
Mm-hmm. Which is a kind of relationship between, for example, water and the earth and back through and how it comes and goes and how it responds to being used and all of that. We have to do that kind of integrated approach, don't we?
Well, that's it. And so I've, you know, after 38 years at uni, I...
You are actually smart. You must be very smart by now, hey?
Well, I don't know. Maybe I'm so dumb that I had to spend 38 years at university to learn.
You're sharing it pretty well, so I think you're doing okay. I want you to talk about the people that don't have any water. What do we do about that?
Well, there are so many different systems that we can do to provide water. I mean, there are systems where you can, you know, take the water out of the air, but it's actually, there's no one size fits all solution. Mm-hmm. When you need to look at the local environment, because it's very different what you do in a desert environment than what you do in a temperate or equatorial environment.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really sort of permaculture principles, you know, what's the local rainfall, what's the groundwater, what are the systems in place, what are the weather patterns that you can tap into. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, this is, you know, we need local solutions to create, you know, to address this global problem. And once you provide clean water for people, it's transformative in their life. And I've realized that in the first world. So one of the things I did, I actually retired from my university job at the start of last year. And I figured that, you know, I'd finally learned as much as I needed. And, you know, my intention when I started in medical school in 1982 was I wanted to become a world leader in wellness. I wanted to really learn about wellness and help, you know, understand wellness enough and become a respected authority in the wellness field so I could help tip this evolutionary shift towards wellness rather than the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And so I figured I'd done that by the start of last year. And as you do when you, you know, sort of common thing in Australia, you finish university, you take a gap year.
Mm-hmm.
So in the last year, I sort of took the year off and, you know, ran some retreats and, you know, really didn't really work. I just really found the fun in the year. And then this year I was ready to go to work and, you know, do what I'm meant to on the planet. And it seems, you know, what I'm doing is really needed. So, you know, I've been doing a lot of work. You know, I've been actually working harder than I've ever worked during this pandemic, producing a lot of content for a lot of it for the spa and wellness industry.
Mm-hmm.
To sort of document the benefits of simple treatments, simple water-based treatments and heat-based treatments. But also I've created a water company. So I've started selling like the top water filters because everyone was asking me.
Oh, what are they? Wow.
Well, for years I've been talking about detoxification and, you know, I've written articles on the 10 toxic truths and talking about how we need to, you know, eliminate toxicity. And the most basic thing we can do is to drink clean water. But there was no one filter that I could say, this is the one to get.
Mm-hmm.
So I sort of researched it and then put together the elements and created one. And this is, you know, the water filters I've developed are all stainless steel. They're designed to last, you know, 50, 100 years with replaceable cartridges, which is based on a patented Russian technology. And they're able to filter all the water for your house.
Hmm.
So that means you can bathe in what I call beautiful water. And the filters, so they're the basic filters I've created. Now, I'm actually still in the process now of upgrading them to what I call beautiful water. And beautiful water is filtered, but it's also structured, balanced, balanced in terms of pH and minerals, and it's blessed. It actually has consciousness imbued into the water. And then it's also given away for free. Because
Who blesses it?
I've got this sort of magical alchemy community that I'm involved or connected to, that they have it's not a scientific process, it's a alchemical magical process, but there are 72 scientific anomalies about water we don't understand. So there's room for magic there. And what they do is they've got my filters, they hold that in consciousness, they create a design. And then that design, which has some sort of sacred geometry involved with it, gets embedded into not just the logo, but a pattern that goes around the stainless steel canisters that makes these filters actually look beautiful. So they're not just filters, they're like sacred water vessels.
Wow.
And they've also got blessing words embedded into the design. So I thank you, I love you, I respect you, just which, you know, you can say into the water.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also and really about the blessing, you know, you don't have to have these special designs. Anything that you do to increase your consciousness of where your water comes from can be effective. So even if you just went and wrote, I love you, I thank you, I respect you, or whatever, you know, some blessing words,
mm-hmm.
and on a bit of paper, you know, of a some device, then you wrap that around where your water meter or where the water comes into your house.
Mm-hmm.
So just so you're consciously connected to where your water is coming from.
Do you sell those, the filter part, do you sell them on your website?
I do. Yeah. Oh, the basic filters now, and surprisingly, I've been selling a few into America, which I'm not really geared up to do. I was going to actually launch the Beautiful Water Systems in September this year. I'm very connected in the hot spring industry. I'm a part owner of an incredible hot spring in New Zealand, but also Glen Ivy Springs in California, just near Orange County. It's one of the oldest and largest hot springs in America. And I've convinced them, and there's also Peninsula Hot Springs in Australia, which is the largest hot spring in Australia. And they both Glen Ivy and Peninsula Hot Springs get well over 1,000 people every single day. And they've agreed to stop selling plastic water bottles and install these point-of-use filters at all their drinking fountains and water bottle refill stations.
Wonderful.
And I want to create that as a culture. So to have conscious businesses, whether they're restaurants or gyms or spas or yoga centers, to install these beautiful water systems and then give that water away for free. And there's an app that a friend of mine in Bali has created called Refill My Bottle. And it's a global app, and anyone can just put up a site that says you can come here and you can refill your water bottle for free.
Wow. Is it going well? Are all kinds of people? Although, you know, we're in lockdown. Are you in lockdown over there? You live in Australia, right?
Yeah, we are. And I sort of launched this at the hot springs here in Victoria, near Melbourne, on World Water Day, which was March 22nd.
Okay.
And then the following day, the hot springs closed. And they're still closed. So my business model, you know, has had a bit of a challenging start. But the concept is that if enough businesses have these filter systems and give away water for free, and then people can find them on this app. So, you know, if you want a drink of water, if you want to fill your water bottle, you can find your nearest beautiful water outlet. Then anyone selling plastic water bottles near that outlet, they're going to go out of business or at least stop selling their plastic water bottles.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a strategy for giving away a higher quality product. Then you can buy in a plastic water bottle. And the cost of water from these filters, it's less than 1 cent per litre.
Wow.
You know, where you buy it, it's about $3 a litre in Australia or more. So, and you know, it's a disaster that, you know, we make currently on Earth 500 billion with a B, water bottles every year.
Mm.
And that's a million a minute. And they get mainly end up in the ocean. So how do we transform that? Well, you can't fight that. I don't believe in opposing anything. I believe in working to what I want and then just working on that. So rather than trying to stop plastic, you know, let's just find a better way. So these filters.
It's like you saying refill your bottle here offsets what would have been a market for the plastic bottles, right? It's the same idea, parallel. Huh?
And that way, you know, so one of my aims is to, you know, realize worldwide wellness. You know, how do we make it real, you know, worldwide wellness? But the other one is to bathe the world in beautiful water.
How do we get that? What a line.
And this is, and, you know, you don't have to do it from my systems. There are other ways to filter, structure, balance, and bless your water and give a water away for free. But with these systems, they can give away the water, they can attract conscious customers, and then they can sell the water filters and get a commission on the filters, and that offsets the income they would have made from the plastic water bottles.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a business strategy that, you know, it's still a fledgling business right now because of the lockdowns and supply chains and everything. But as a model, I can see that working not just financially for me, and 10% of the sale price goes to a foundation I've helped create with some great colleagues of mine called Bathe the World Foundation.
Bathe the World, okay.
And that aims to get water, you know, beautiful water to everybody on Earth. And that's, you know, we're just fledgling again. We're starting off on that journey. But as an intention and as a positive action, as a baby step towards what I want to achieve, every effort I put into this business and to creating consciousness around water and delivering beautiful water systems to people, it makes me feel really good. So it gives me a lot of, you know, spiritual and psychological comfort to do that, as well as, you know, gives me something active. You know, I'm actively.
You're contributing in a huge way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a really powerful thing that I can do.
Now tell me, what does that do? And I know you do a lot of research and so on. So what does that do to the immune system to be drinking the beautiful water, for example?
Well, it's never been actively studied. And in fact, we've got some research projects we've also been put on hold because the universities are shut down.
Mm-hmm.
Where we're actually testing the different waters' ability to grow bacteria and yeast.
Oh, okay.
So I'm involved also with a kombucha company that make, well, not just kombucha, they make jun, which is a fermented honey. And so these are living
brews.
How
do you spell that?
J-U-N.
Okay.
And that was a Tibetan drink where they developed, because normally it's very hard to ferment honey because honey is so antimicrobial. But there are, you know, cultures that can do that. And it's sort of like a kombucha, but instead of using sugar, you use honey. But it's a living brew. There's, you know, this SCOBY, the symbiotic colony of bacteria and yeast that use up the glucose or the honey and turn that into these complex mixture of acetic acid and gluconic acid and all these salicylic acid. So you make these quite complex drinks that are also living. And what we're doing is we're testing the ability of different water to grow SCOBYs to see does the bacteria and yeast respond differently to different water. So that's one of the active research projects we're going on. And we're doing what's called metagenomic studies.
Metagenomic.
So it's where you take a sample of, or in this case, water, and you analyze all the different DNA within that. So you look at all the different species and genus of bacteria and yeast and archaea that are growing in that. So that becomes a study of all the life that grows in that water.
Wow.
So we're doing that at the university. We're doing studies on glycemic response and insulin response after you consume the kombucha with a meal. So that's some research we're doing. But in terms of the effect on our immune system, we're really understanding now that our immune system is in harmony and in symbiosis with our microbiome.
Okay.
And we live in this incredible ecosystem of bacteria and viruses. I mean, there are literally trillions of viruses in our bodies, on our skin, on every surface of your body.
That's so interesting, isn't it? Because we go, virus, but we have to have them, right?
Oh, they're absolutely essential. Viruses are they're the email of the biological world. You know, they transmit information. And just being in a room with somebody, you're sharing viruses and bacteria, and there's this whole level of communication that happens energetically, but also microbiologically between humans. And that's actually a really good thing. We need to be communicating at that microbiological level, and that can cause a stress to our bodies, but that stress is a eustress. It's a positive stress. Your immune system needs to be exposed to all these different organisms all the time to be strong and healthy. And that's why babies, you know, when they grow up, you know, they're touching the ground and touching their face all the time, and they're training their immune system. So this microbiome is not just essential for our health, it's essential for our mental health and our moods and our diet and what we want to eat and all of these things.
We're still getting a lot of the wrong information the way we're living, and it's kind of a fear-based self-protection right now. And that's the question,
right,
isn't it?
And that started 100 years ago after the First World War, where the fear of, you know, cholera and typhoid said, okay, we're going to put chlorine in all the drinking water.
Mm-hmm.
It's this bizarre situation where we're going to put poison in your water to make it safe and to make it healthy. So, you know, currently in most places around the world, you know, 0.2 to 0.6 parts per million of chlorine is put into drinking water to make it so-called healthy. But chlorine is super toxic. The reason why we use it is it's such a powerful poison that it will kill bacteria at the point of use. So if you're bathing in chlorinated water, you're actually waging war on the microbiome of your skin. And even our understanding of that is changed. Just last year, there was a study that came out that challenged our thoughts on our skin. Because when I went to medical school, we were taught that, you know, the skin surface area is about 1.8 or 2 square meters. You know, if you laid out the skin, that was the surface area. But then they've realized, well, every time you've got a hair follicle or a sweat gland that dips into the skin, that increases that surface area and it creates a habitat for viruses and microbes.
Hmm.
And they're good viruses and microbes. And if you count that surface area, your skin has a surface area of about 30 square meters. And that's a massive area for interacting with, you know, microbial life. Yet if you bathe in chlorinated water, you're damaging that microbial life. You're oxidizing the oils and the natural protective oils that protect you from sun damage, that protect your skin from aging and from pathogens. So just bathing in chlorinated water has a big effect on our immune health and our overall health. And then when you drink chlorinated water, it's not clear. There's been no research. There's one group I know of in Perth in Australia who are studying children's microbiome where they drink filtered water or normal chlorinated water. But that research is still not hasn't got any results yet. But you can imagine that if you're waging war on your microbiome every day, mm-hmm. that's going to have a huge impact on health. And pretty much every chronic disease now that you know you can mention has some relationship with the gut microbiome.
Mm-hmm. Like fibromyalgia and all these different autoimmune. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so many. Mm-hmm. You know, a whole range of chronic diseases. So by having this fear base that, you know, we're scared of public health outbreaks, and sure, you know, you don't want to have public health outbreaks, so putting chlorine may be effective, but mm-hmm. you certainly want to remove that chlorine before you drink it or bathe in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as I say, drinking less poison is probably good for you.
So let's jump back into breathing. I know I'm going to have to be done here, and I don't want to let you go. But if we were to do those really intense breathing techniques, would that clear us out enough to build our immunity as well? You know, say you've already got chlorine in your system.
Well, I mean, the chlorine comes and goes. So I've developed what I call extreme wellness practices.
Okay.
And the way to talk to yourself, so if you think about, you know, the most basic life, there are five elements, you know, getting back to those five. But the five elements of life is water, it's glucose, it's oxygen, temperature, and carbon dioxide.
Okay.
So they're the five basic reactions of respiration or photosynthesis, and that's what our mitochondria process. And we can consciously go to the, you know, push ourselves to the extremes of all those things. So with water, we can, you know, dehydrate ourselves or we can hydrate. With glucose, we can feast or fast. With oxygen, we can, you know, go hypoxia and hold our breath, or we can, you know, overbreathe and increase our oxygen. We can do the same with hot and cold, and we can do the same with activity. We can be in full activity and in flow, or we can actively do nothing and do as little as possible.
Hmm.
So by consciously visiting the extremes of our physiology, whether that's, you know, water, glucose, oxygen, temperature, or carbon dioxide, we can stress ourselves, and we can find that the point that where we're comfortably uncomfortable, the point where we have forced mindfulness. And at that point, we've gone to our physiological extreme, and then that helps us define the middle point, which is the point of bliss, the point of homeostasis, that deep inner well of our being. And you'll find that when you do the breathing practices, whether it's the hyperventilation or the breath holding, there's a point where, you know, where you're uncomfortable, you know, it's dysphoric. There's a, you know, it's a bit of discomfort, you know, when you've hyperventilated and your head's a bit dizzy and, you know, you're a bit spinny, or there's a bit of dysphoria where you hold your breath to the point where your oxygen's, you're becoming quite hypoxic.
Mm-hmm. Fall over.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you're doing it lying down or sitting.
Yeah.
But the same in a sauna or an ice bath. There's a point where you get to the point where, the sensations from your body tell you if you just focus and breathe, you'll be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, even with a yoga stretch, you get to the point of the yoga stretch where you get to that limit and it's sort of uncomfortable, but if you just breathe and stay still, you can be there and be okay. But if you push yourself harder, you'd probably hurt yourself.
So, Dr. Mark, I have to end this, but I want to ask you one. I really love what you're saying, and I want to just ask millions of questions. But the only question I'll leave you with right now is, what do you do for fun?
Oh, everything I do is for fun.
Okay.
So I've made a decision that my whole life is focused on fun. So for me, it's fun, you know, bringing beautiful water systems to the world. For me, I mean, I love, you know, visiting hot springs. I love partying. I love festivals. I love dancing. I love music. So probably the most fun I have, because I love being that bridge. So going to festivals and conferences and networking with lots of people is probably my most fun.
But also, it's a little bit blocked right now, though, isn't it?
Well, it is. But for me, this is fun. I mean, sharing these ideas and you know, sharing this information is also fun for me. So. Mm-hmm. No,
and digging it up must be fun, too, because you're speaking of many experiences as you bring it to us, you know.
Yeah, I love researching. I love learning deeper, you know, exploring all these things more and more. So, you know, I've just written an article, a scientific article on the use of heat for treating COVID-19.
Okay.
And researching that was huge fun, and learning that, you know, pretty much all life, even plants, but certainly all insects and birds and fish and reptiles use heat to treat pathogens. And all mammals use fever to treat pathogens. So we can outsource that energy to make a fever with a sauna or a hot bath.
Wow.
So learning all about that, for me, that's fun.
Also, I have a far infrared sauna. That works, doesn't it?
Yeah, I have one too. And yeah, I use it regularly.
I love it.
And you know, there's a point when you go to the sauna where, because a lot of people ask me, how long do you stay? What temperature? And it's not really about the temperature or the time or the humidity. It's about getting to the point where you're forced to be mindful, where you're comfortably uncomfortable, and you just go within, and you spend a little bit of time going within, and that for me is the real benefit you get from that. And there's always
it's a kind of a giving over, right?
Yeah, it centers you, and there's a lot of physiological and psychological benefits. I've written about them, and people can look at that on my website. But that point of just going to the point where your mind and body become one.
Wonderful.
And the more you can do that, the more you can tap into that love and that confidence that things are going to work out well, and you can sort of expel that whole idea of fear and entropy and things are shutting down. You have to crave security. Because the future isn't secure. We don't know what's going to happen, but we need to trust that the universe has got our back.
Mm-hmm.
And the universe is our back and it's our front, because we're connected to it on all levels.
Well, you're talking a lot about self-empowerment, which is brilliant too. I think that helps us get through a lot of the unknown, doesn't it?
It's all about self, not just empowerment, but self-awakening.
Self-awakening. Tell people what your website is. It is just your name, or give them your website.
DrMarc.co is my personal website, so DrMarc.co, or ExtremeWellness.co. So it's just ExtremeWellness.co. And it's got some blogs and stuff about the filters, and it's a evolution. You know, it's all being developed at the moment, but it's there's enough information there to keep people busy for a while.
We're excited to be taking some of that trip with you. I thank you so much, and I hope maybe you'll come back on Paradigm Shifters, because you are a paradigm shifter, and we're fascinated by a lot of what you're exploring.
Well, thank you, Roger. It's been a pleasure. As I say, this is really fun for me, and really thank you for the opportunity and the platform, and hopefully this has been useful for your audience, and I'm very, very grateful.
And I've had fun too, so thank you for that. Come again, as they say.
Yeah, well, I'm happy to. Anytime you want to do it, we can make another time. That'd be great.
Great. So take care, and thank you again. Thank you all for listening, and I hope you got as much as I do from Dr. Marc Cohen as we all move into more and more evolution and wellness.